Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang, and this is episode number 271. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living series, we're joined today by author and veteran U.S. Foreign Service officer, Louis Sell, who'll be discussing his upcoming Smithsonian Associates presentation, The Future of U.S.-Russia Relations. Louis Sell is author of the recent book From Washington to Moscow, which traces the history of U.S.-Soviet relations between 1972 and 1991 and explains why the Cold War came to an abrupt end. Drawing heavily on archival sources and memoirs, many in Russian, as well as his own experiences, Louis Sell vividly describes events from the perspectives of American and Soviet participants.
Russia remains a major power in a military sense. It remains a superpower, certainly in nuclear weapons. We tend to forget, and we shouldn't, that Russia remains the only country that can destroy us in 30 minutes.
That, of course, is our guest today, U.S. veteran Foreign Service officer Louis Sell. This Smithsonian Associates series, of which Louis Sell covers the first of three courses, looks through the lens of American diplomats working at the forefront of U.S.-Russia relations. This series seeks to explore the current tensions between these two key world powers through understanding their history, examining current challenges, and considering where the relationship may be headed. I've read Louis Sell's book, thoroughly enjoyed it, and I know the Not Old Better Show audience will find it fascinating too. Please join me in welcoming to the Not Old Better Show, Louis Sell. Well, Louis Sell, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm really pleased to be here.
It's a pleasure for me to talk to you as well. I think this is just going to be a fascinating subject. Of course, the subject is the upcoming presentation. It's a three-evening course presentation titled The Future of U.S.-Russia Relations. As a veteran U.S. Foreign Service officer, Louis Sell, tell us a little bit about the upcoming course, just briefly, about the future of U.S.-Russia relations.
I have been asked by the Smithsonian to kick off this series with a little history, how we got to where we are, and then the current situation. I'm assuming they did that because of a recent book I've published, From Washington to Moscow, U.S.-Soviet Relations and the Collapse of the USSR, in which I tried to talk about how and why the Soviet Union collapsed, but also what it means for current U.S. relations with Russia. And so that's kind of, in a way, going to be my starting point for this lecture that I'll be giving.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, I do think this sounds like a very interesting lecture. Of course, it's very much in the news, always is, it seems. And we often refer to the two countries, U.S. and Russia, as superpowers. Can we refer to Russia as a superpower today?
I think it's wrong to call Russia. In fact, Russia, I would say, is definitely not a superpower. If you look at Russia in comparison with the United States and other countries today, or in comparison to the USSR during the Cold War, I mean, you find very great differences. Population. The population of Russia today is roughly one half of what it was under the Soviet Union, slightly more, and less than half of American population. During the Cold War, the Soviet Union was thought to have the world's second largest economy. Today, it's maybe the seventh largest economy in the world, eclipsed by the United States and China and others. Russia remains a major power in a military sense. It remains a superpower, certainly in nuclear weapons. We tend to forget, and we shouldn't, that Russia remains the only country that can destroy us in 30 minutes. And I think it's also worth remembering that it's probably a superpower in the cyber world, in the world of cyber conflict. But overall, Russia is not anywhere near in the same relative position to the United States or the rest of the world that it occupied during the Cold War.
So knowing that, hearing you talk a little bit about that, it is sobering, certainly, to be reminded of the 30-minute classification there. That is, in fact, I think, always in the news. The cyber issue is in the news. In that sense, is this post-Soviet era, this Russia influence, is it expanding? Is their influence expanding?
I would say there, yes. That's perhaps one of the few areas where Russia in its current position is expanding its influence, its role in global politics, not obviously in a very good way, but they have extremely good capabilities in the cyber field, and they are willing to use these in an extremely aggressive fashion, something that is really pretty new in the international environment. New in the way they have weaponized cyber tools against the United States and against many other countries in the world. And this is something we really need to figure out how to deal with.
You know, again, given the constant change with our relationship with Russia, the cyber challenge is a big one. What are some of the other challenges we face with our relationship with Russia?
Well, I mean, I'll mention first nuclear weapons. As we discussed briefly before, that is an area where in the past we have had tremendous rivalry. We have also had tremendous success in cooperating with Moscow in the latter stages of the Cold War, and even throughout most of the post-Soviet era. Nuclear weapons is one area where our two countries cooperated pretty well, both in reducing the number and in steps to enhance the security of nuclear weapons. When I was present at the first U.S.-Soviet START negotiations, nuclear arms negotiations in June of 1982, our two countries at that time had roughly 10,000 new strategic nuclear weapons deployed each. We are now treaty limited to approximately 1,500 each. That's still a lot of nuclear weapons, but it's an enormous progress. And we cooperated very closely in helping secure nuclear weapons in the post-Soviet space. But that cooperation threatens to come undone. The Russians have been accused, and I think rightly, of violating one of the major Cold War arms control agreements, the INF agreement, which eliminated all medium-range nuclear weapons. They seem to be violating that. And the current U.S.-Russia nuclear arms control agreement will expire in a year or two. And that would, on one hand, also open up the possibility of unrestrained competition in weapons, but it also would threaten to undo a whole range of pretty technical but pretty important diplomatic and negotiating rules which underlie this regime of nuclear arms control. And if that ever happened, it would be hard, might well be hard to get back to this rather stable era we've enjoyed in the last two or three decades of that competition.
We are with veteran U.S. Foreign Service Officer Louis Sell. Louis Sell is the author of the book, From Washington to Moscow. Louis Sell will be heading off the three-evening course for the Smithsonian Associates titled The Future of U.S.-Russian Relations. We're going to put links up to where you can find more information about Louis Sell, his book, dates and details about the upcoming Smithsonian presentation. But Louis Sell, I just have one final question for you. I know you're very busy. Let's talk a little bit more about some of these challenges. And I think this one is the one that might be on everybody's mind. Did the fall of the Soviet Union and the really almost humiliating collapse lead to the rise of Putin and it what seems to be this lack of cooperation between U.S. and Russia?
I think it did. I think that you cannot understand Putin's Russia and the shape of Russia's relations with the United States without having some understanding of how the USSR collapsed and how Russians perceived that collapse, how they experienced it and its aftermath. That was the underlying purpose and message of my book, and I think it's still an important one. In 1991, the USSR disappeared as a nation. But it was pretty unexpected to almost everyone. You know, I spent most of my adult life studying the Soviet Union, and I would like to be able to claim that I predicted it, but I certainly didn't. No one really did. And it came as a surprise, but it came without a lot of the things that usually accompany imperial collapse, like a loss of a war, a foreign invasion, some kind of major natural calamity. They have often in history brought down major empires, but that didn't happen with the Soviet Union. It came quickly. It came as a surprise to many Soviets as well as to outsiders. And when that happens, sometimes after a while you start looking for, okay, what did cause it? And sometimes people start looking for scapegoats. And that's one thread of this. Once it turned out that the Soviet Union had collapsed, and over the 1990s, what replaced it was not what Russians had hoped or what we had hoped. People started looking for scapegoats. To some extent, they found them internally. Mikhail Gorbachev, the architect of perestroika, Boris Yeltsin, still, I think, the only democratically elected president of Russia, virtually reviled today in Russia as dupes or tools of the West. But they've also found a scapegoat in the United States. They regard us as implacably hostile, and they tend to interpret every action we do is aimed at keeping Russia weak. Part of that they do, and Putin definitely plays on that feeling. A major thread of his foreign policy and of his domestic policy is the idea that Russia is back. The humiliations that many Russians thought they had experienced at a time of weakness in the 90s and afterwards, Putin is saying, that's not happening again. They have to pay attention to us, he said. Syria, the takeover of Crimea, which a complete violation of international law, a violation of commitments Russia undertook in the 1990s, but I think probably overwhelmingly welcomed by the vast majority of Russians, even those who oppose Putin. That's really important in understanding where we are now. Russia under Putin wants respect, and unfortunately, the only way they think they can get it is through military power, through actions aimed at kind of humiliating or bringing down Western policies, which is too bad, because there are areas where we should find ways to cooperate with Russia, not just nuclear, but we have a common interest in combating terrorism. We have common interest in various regions around the world, for instance, the Arctic. We need to find some way to get beyond, on both sides, this current impasse to look for real areas where we can cooperate, but it has to be Russia has to stop some of what it's doing now, which is extremely aggressive and really almost could be considered acts of war.
This is such an important subject, Luisel, and we so value your time. Thank you for joining us today. Of course, we've been with Luisel. Luisel will be speaking at the upcoming Smithsonian Associates program, the title of which is The Future of U.S.-Russia Relations. We can learn much from you, Luisel. We look forward to learning more on October 17th. Thank you again, though, for joining us today.
Well, Paul, thank you very much for having me. I've enjoyed the talk, and I look forward to the lecture in Washington and the chance to talk to people down there.
We look forward to it as well. Again, thank you. Coming up October 17th, it's a three-evening course, and Luisel will be kicking it off. But thank you again, Luisel, for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
My thanks to the Smithsonian Associates team for making this program and interviews so easy to do on my part. They do all the hard work. And my thanks to Luisel for joining me today. Remember, check out our website and show notes for more details on the future of U.S.-Russia relations October 17th, October 24th, and October 31st as a three-part course. Thanks to all of you, my audience. The Not Old Better Show. Let's talk about better. Thanks, everybody.